From the boardroom to the shop floor, good business runs on good governance. Join esteemed expert in governance, Dr. Nimrod Mbele, for the next hour as he takes us beyond governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa.
A very good evening and welcome to tonight's installment of Beyond Governance here at 101 Port Mount High FM. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I'm delighted once again to be sharing this space and time with you as we share very insightful observations from our key guests who have obviously amassed wealth of experience along the way. In tonight's show, we will certainly not disappoint. We've got two installments, as I've already indicated earlier in my brief discussions with Mike McKenna. The first being that we have a G20. We all know we've got a G20 that is on the way. And for that, I will be joined by Musi Maimane, who is the leader of Build One South Africa. And he'll give us his view in terms of the government of national unity. We'll certainly touch on the postponement of the budget speech, as well as some of the geopolitical moves that that inform the foreign policy. And in the second bit of our conversation, I will be joined by Professor Foster Piddley, who is the Dean and Director at the Henley Business School. And he will take us through the impending G20, as we all know, the G20, which is a B20, I beg your pardon, which is a structure that runs parallel to the G20 that is currently underway. It brings together all big shots, if you like, of businesses across the G20 to discuss pertinent issues. So John will give us his perspective on what is likely to be discussed at that particular convention, which is currently underway. Before we get into the gist of our conversation, allow me to once again thank Michael McKenna who and the Overdrive team. They are back on the radio tomorrow. Moving along, let's also appreciate Vusi Masinga as well as Craig Guthrie, who produces the show. Last but not least, of course, I'll be found wanting, if I may not acknowledge Betsy, who's a technical producer of the show. Thanks very much. These folks have done exceptional well. Moving along, if you miss any of our previous conversation, not to worry. Simply go to High FM website, download any of the podcast, and share your views with us. Last week, we had a very interesting conversation with the former president of World Farmers Organization, as well as the former president of Southern African Agri Initiative, Theo the Acher. I mean, very interesting insight that you've shared with us, particularly on issues that affect the Afrikaner in the context of the land expropriation bill. As you might be aware, that particular bill has literally evoked a whole lot of emotion across the political spectrum in the country. I welcome your thoughts once again. Our SMS line is 08-061-895-109. And of course, your views are most welcome via my X handle, which is _@DrMbele. Without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome Mr. Maimane. Good evening and welcome to Beyond Governance, sir.
Good evening and good evening to fellow South Africans. Thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure is certainly ours. Without any waste of time, I've already painted the scene in terms of where the G20 is. Obviously, all heads of state have converged to discuss very pertinent issues. And South Africa is a very unique position, you know, to perhaps maybe influence the dialogues, particularly on foreign policy. What is your view of the governance of South Africa in the context of the G20 that is currently underway?
Well, I think I want to take a view that says South Africa has, for the last decade at least, followed some of the Davos dictum and followed policies that in some ways have not produced growth. South Africa has been growing at 1% in the last 10 years on average. Q3 last year gave us a 0.3%. And so in the absence of material growth and high levels of unemployment, it becomes quite clear the fact that we either change tact or we just keep going the same way as we keep going. And there are some massive issues on the horizon that South Africa needs to think about. One of them being the fact that as we become part of the climate change agreement, what will that mean for our energy infrastructure, given the fact that 70% of our energy is coal driven? What will South Africa mean for UN development, sustainable development goals on education in a universe where we are passing our children at 30%? In a globalizing, in an international market that's requiring skills in AI, these become some fundamentally crucial questions that South Africa has to answer. And on that score, on the global conversation, on issues about the future, I think South Africa will get left behind progressively unless we radically change step and begin to rethink what our future prospects are.
Thank you very much for that overview. I mean, I think you know, the listeners will certainly agree with you that the economy has not grown, at a reasonable rate for this country to be where it's supposed to be. Need to grow at least by 6%. And for the past 10 years, as you've pointed out, we have barely scratched the surface. But having said that, don't you think the South Africa hosting and chairing the G20 is likely to reinforce or perhaps maybe change its posture in relation to the fundamentals that you referred to that will drive economic growth to an extent that we are able to take advantage of the global space that we've been given?
Yeah, there's some important decisions that we have to make. I think certainly for South Africa's point of view, The crucial issues really pertain to what the perception on the Global South is. So that becomes a very important discussion to be had. The second is about asking South Africa about the UN Security Council issues as we pertain to very pertinent geopolitical conflicts, notwithstanding Israel, Gaza, Russia, Ukraine. So South Africa has a very important choice to make as to what its new alignment must look like. I think chairing the G20 is an important thing, but even more important than chairing the G20 is actually having the policy reform domestically to get up to 5 to 6%. It's no use having the G20 in the country and you can't keep the lights on. It's absolutely no use having policies that are simply not pro-growth. So for me, I think that whilst we chair such an important opportunity this year, I would approach it from the perspective of our foreign policy ought to be driven by nothing else but whether we find countries that are aligned in terms of how do we create growth, how does South Africa become a manufacturing hub, how do we open up trade agreements, certainly strengthening of our GOA, how do we go out to make sure that our education systems are aligned globally, and ultimately what technologies do we need to deploy to ensure South Africa is a safe place to do business in? I think that should be the questions. I worry that it is symbolic, but sometimes I worry that we lack or we don't do enough of the work substantively to reform our economy and maximize this opportunity. I would hate for this to be like another Soccer World Cup. Great event, great success in terms of hosting, but after that, we don't benefit from the infrastructure that was built in terms of making sure that it can develop our football. We don't maximize going and stepping up into the global space, because when you look at South Africa's ranking in the global position, sure, we in the G20 and the African Union is going to be a part of that and play a significant role in the UN Security Council. I think South Africa needs to move up the ranks. We need to be in the top 10 countries in the world, given our minerals, given where we sit strategically in terms of trade routes, given our relationships with Africa and legal framework. I really believe South Africa needs to step into gear and achieve different outcomes.
I mean, those are very interesting insights that you share with us. But the elephant in the room is a notion of government of national unity, and with different political parties pursuing different ideological stance with different economic trajectory. The case in point, we had the budget speech, which was postponed purely because the cabinet could not agree. Then how do you expect, what is it that the Government of National Unity should be looking at in addressing specific policy issues that are pro-growth that you've just made that you have made mention of. Because the reality is that if we do not have a stable and flourishing Government of National Unity, we are very much unlikely to achieve some of the objectives that you've outlined.
What we need is, rather than solving the politics of the Government of National Unity, we need to solve for the plan. Because part of the greatest dilemma that we face is that we haven't articulated what is the thesis for growth that South Africa puts forward. And here's, for me, the key issues that we need to put on the table. We need to approach a transport-led infrastructure growth plan in this country. Now, it is the reason I pick on transport, because transport is symbolic of logistics and ensuring that actually goods that are manufactured here can get to Bait Bridge, can get anywhere else easier and quicker, fixing the rail system, ensuring more than anything that we can transition from steam engine trains to electric trains. And that would also mean that it's easier for people to get to work, so that we cushion the blow of inflation on the poor. But also the opportunity is, if you build bulk infrastructure between Gauteng, Free State, Northwest, and Mpumalanga, what you are then able to do is create a renewed triangle of massive infrastructure rollout, which means you can attract capital directed at that, but you can utilize the tourism assets that sit within those provinces. All of us who are in Gauteng know the benefit that the Gautrain has brought in terms of the development of Midrand, as an example, the All Africa Mall, all of those instances. These become key infrastructural-led things, so that even if you are attracting capital, it is driven towards projects. So it's rather than saying, give me money and I'll find the project, it's saying, here are the projects, fund them, and you can derive the benefits from them. On the issues of even things like expropriation, etc., South Africans must understand, governments all over the world have got laws around expropriation. But the question is, because of the lack of public trust and public leadership, South Africans have lost trust. There is a genuine belief that expropriation is about taking land from one race to another. And if that's the nature of the conversation, you are missing out on the developmental conversation about saying, if we said we want to build an airport and we need land, expropriation is a necessity in that instance, but let it be for the purpose of an airport that is for public good. So laws are being passed without a plan. So to your existential question, which is, do I think the GNU will survive, etc.? I think the GNU actually suffers because it has kept ANC plans with parties almost like in a choir harmonizing in exchange for fancy vehicles and top security.
We'll be back.
I say that because when I look at the policy direction of the country, very little has changed.
Yes, indeed. On that very important point, let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a second. But when we come back, I want to, Pepimeter, to reflect on what you just mentioned, which is the transport-led initiative, which you, in your view, is a basis for getting the country out of economic quagmire. Let's take a break. We'll be back now.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Dembele. If you've just joined us, it's about 23 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock. I'm having a thought-provoking conversation with the one and only Musi Maimane, who is the leader of BOSA. Before we took that short break, he gave us a very interesting insight, because it is one thing to blame slow economic growth, but it is another to provide solid solutions that are likely to change the status quo, which is something that he has done. In his view, the GNU, we are missing the point if we talk in the politics of GNU, because for him it does not take us anywhere. We need to be talking policy specifics. And to this point, he mentioned appropriation-led initiatives, which means transport-led initiatives. And he also made reference to expropriation of land, which, in his view, again, it is a legitimate ask by any government, because any government have rules. It is just that in South Africa, there's a public we have to deal with public trust deficit, because expropriation of land presupposes that land has been taken from whites to from whites to black, of which that is not necessarily the case. Coming back to this point, how do we then build this? How do we then build the trust deficit? Because I suppose this is the biggest challenge that we're facing, because when you look at the numbers on the elections, we had close to 20 million South Africans that did not cast a vote, which also boils down to the trust that you're referring to. What are our practical steps that we can take to move away to that kind of trust deficit?
And what needs to happen is, in fact, we need ethical leadership. Right. You cannot build public trust when citizens think their leaders are corrupt, and they see acts of corruption, and they see people who are corrupt literally being charged of corruption but getting away with it. It certainly enhances that view that says that this has got nothing to do with public benefit, but personal benefit. The second is the reaffirmation of all citizens. In all truth, all South Africans, regardless of the color of the skin or the God they worship, need to be valued as South Africans. And I think it would be amiss of me not to be cognizant of sometimes some of the rhetoric that gets lambasted against Jewish South Africans, and missing the fact that Jewish South Africans have made a contribution to this country and continue to do so. And so to kind of marginalize them, to me, is the sort of conduct that loses that sense of patriotism that says, how do we contribute further to this country? The third is, naturally, is trust is a bit like in any interpersonal relationship. Consistency is the key. When rules are applied unfairly or arbitrarily. So what I mean by that is that the government pronounces on X and then does Y. That doesn't always need to be an act of corruption. It can be a sense of, we can't predict where the government's policy is. We don't have policy certainty. And ultimately, on big projects, so when this conversation about whether we're going to have water supply in the city of Johannesburg, when there's absolutely no plan around how to fund municipal boards or water boards, citizens lose trust. They feel that they fragment into their own lagers, where they feel like, well, the only alternative is each one for themselves. So let me find a borehole, let me find electricity, but I certainly am not going to commit myself to the national project. And I think in the absence of that national dialogue, that national vision, that shared commitment, ethical leaders that can contribute, I cannot see how solving for politicians and putting together, almost if you like, a new configuration of ministers suddenly solves for public trust. I think it has given a sense of confidence in that we've avoided worst case scenario, which I think others would define as an ANC, EFF or MK coalition. But what it certainly hasn't done, it hasn't gone out to say, forget the politicians. What is the institutional policy direction that we take? Because even if you're in opposition or whatever, if there's a tangible plan, as we saw with the NDP in its earlier days, regardless of whether you were in opposition or not, you thought, this is a plan that I can get behind. Now, we don't have an NDP type, and President Ramaphosa hasn't told us what are the four or five things he wants to do. He's instead told us of the 10 things we need to do. Now, if everything is a priority, then nothing is. I'm of the view that we should narrow it down, tell citizens these are the five things we are going to do, and get everybody to work towards that.
Absolutely. Perhaps maybe your quick reflection on the postponement of the budget speech. What does that say to you? Bearing in mind that South Africa is not the only country that has experienced the delay or postponement of the budget speech, but in other countries such as Germany, as you might know, it cost the coalition in other parts of the world, ministers were fired. What is your take on South African delaying of budget speech? Are we maturing as democracy, as the president would like to argue, or is this a sign of dysfunctionality within the GNU?
Well, first and foremost, there are some very sinister things that happened around the postponement here, which I'd like to address. The first is, in fact, if I take you one step back, when the Bella Bill was tabled, signed, when the president was signing it into law, the Sunday Times reported that he got a phone call from AfriForum or Kadi Krill at the time, and they had a conversation and a number of clauses were suspended until later. So effectively, a type of postponement of clauses was then enacted then. At the point, I raised the question, what is the local standard of an entity being able to lobby the president for a postponement and get away with it? Still, I was informed, because that's not how you make the law. The law is made through parliament, and if the president has a problem, either he sends it back to parliament, but after that, if he doesn't have any objections or constitutional objections, then he has to sign it into law. Then the budget comes through. I sit in the Standing Committee on Appropriation. I chair it. I had a look at the budget, and I was in a lockdown meeting. We knew about the 2% VAT hike, and when I read this weekend that Helen Ziller decided to have, they had a conversation with the Minister of Finance in the Sunday Times about a postponement. Again, I have to ask the basic question. It's not my impressions of Helen Ziller. It's that, how is it that actors that are not in government or elected by the people get to have a say as to when the budget can be postponed or not? I find that incredibly undemocratic, and more crucially, all it says is that it's politics ahead of the people. Now, in terms of whether that is functional or not, to me, I think that if you are going to postpone, have the integrity to say, and that is the point I raised, consistency of law. The budget is a bill. It's a law like any other. It has to be processed properly. The 12th of March gives the government enough time, but let's keep in mind, if it doesn't get passed by the 1st of April, departments can only spend 45% of their required budgets, which means that you hamper service delivery, etc. So what needed to happen is that I feel that parties that are now taking claim that they postponed a 2% VAT hike, actually a little bit disingenuous, because if there are two discussions you have in any coalition negotiation, it's this: who's going to be the president and where's the money going to be spent? Those are the two fundamentals. You mean to tell me that 7 months into the thing, if I had known the fact that the budget was running a 5% budget deficit year on year, debt to GDP is 75%, and a 2% VAT hike would only mean 58 billion rands, do you mean that the first time that discussion occurred to anybody was 10 days ago? I think that's disingenuous. I actually think it should have happened almost in the first 2 months of the GNU, in the first cabinet Lekotla, would have been to say, it doesn't matter what plans we announce, we don't have money for it.
Absolutely.
So to me, the fundamentals are, I think that what needs to happen now is that I keep beating this drum. Until we create a plan with priorities that can be measured annually, today it's 2% VAT hike, trust me, next week it's going to be NHI, then the week after that it's going to be funding of ECD centers for 200,000 children, which are underfunded, and then it's going to be the cutting of police, etc., and then provincial budgets falling apart and municipal budgets being underfunded. Does that mean every single time that happens, a postponement must occur, etc.? I think that we need to sit down and use the next 3 weeks effectively to say, we agree on the following things, these are the things that are going to be funded, and you are in it for a year, so that you can't threaten to pull out and not vote for the budget when it doesn't suit you, but you need to implement the following plan for the next year.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Dr. Mayaman, we're going to have to leave it. It's been absolutely beautiful. Thanks for your time. You've given us food for thought, and certainly by the time the budget speed is presented, they would have taken or heeded your call to constructively engage on matters that put South Africa first.
Much appreciated. Thank you very much.
There we go. That was Musa Maimane, who is the leader of BUSA, giving us very interesting insights on the government of national unity.